8:30 a.m. on September 13th, 2023. And I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologists Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Medina?
Present.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
Mr. Nguyen?
Present.
Okay, we have quorum and may proceed.
All right. Before discussing the cases scheduled for review today, I do have some important information to share for everyone in attendance. The Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to Arizona Revised Statutes 32-2081H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer to them full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website pursuant to ARS 32-2081H1. Upon the vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records, or subsection A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Jean Galvin. Please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon the party's request. Please use initials only for patients, children, and the complainant. In addition, do not state specific diagnosis in open session. Instead, please state the diagnosis on record. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content shall not be discussed in a public meeting. Be advised that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. A person or representative of a person who has filed a complaint and is present today's meeting may make a brief statement to the committee, up to 5 minutes, only when prompted by the chair. Additionally, the licensee or respondent who is subject of the complaint will also have an opportunity to make a brief 5-minute statement only when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after the statement is made. Please note that the only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and the respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that the audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. And if interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter. So, to kick it off on the agenda, the first complaint scheduled for review is case number 23-46 against John Mather. As a reminder for the committee members, the purpose of today's review is to determine if there are any potential violations of unprofessional conduct, and if so, refer the matter to the board for further review. For those of you who are not board members, Dr. Mather filed a motion requesting the board not consider certain evidence in this matter that Dr. Mather contends was obtained illegally. The board considered Dr. Mather's motion to suppress its last meeting on September 1st, and the board voted to deny that motion. Thus, the board has already made a decision relative to the inclusion of evidence in this case. This issue will not be reviewed by the CSC. The only matter before the CSC today is whether Dr. Mather engaged in unprofessional conduct. How the evidence was filed in support of the complaint was obtained is not before the committee. Dr. Medina, please provide the committee with a brief overview of the complaint since you're the lead.
Thank you, Chair. This is complaint number 23-46 against Dr. John Mather, holder of Arizona license number 4056, issued on September 10th, 2009. In April 2023, the board received an anonymous complaint against Dr. Mather. The complaint raised allegations relative to conflict of interest and dual relationships. At the time the complaint was filed, Dr. Mather was in a relationship with a woman who resides in Brazil, referenced hereinafter as partner, and in the complaint, three letters were included that were written by Dr. Mather in company letterhead in a professional capacity for his partner and a family member. Two of the letters dated January 2023 that contained recommendations for air accommodations and medical marijuana for the partner's mother, and one regarding the partner's travel to the U.S. and her accommodations at Dr. Mather's home. All letters were written on agency letterhead, referenced his psychology license, and include Dr. Mather's handwritten signature. In his response, Dr. Mather shared that neither his partner nor her family members were a client of his, that the letters were intended to be an example for partner to share with her mother about possibly obtaining from her physicians in Brazil, The letters were not intended to be used in any clinical capacity, and also states that these letters were illegally obtained by possibly his ex-wife, also a licensed psychologist. No specific client is specified in the letters. This concludes my summary to the committee.
Mute. I had to do that at least once. This complaint was submitted anonymously. So I guess we're going to hear from the licensee next. Dr. Mather, are you and or your attorney present?
Good morning. This is Andrew Brevington, attorney for Dr. Mather. He is not present today. And here's why. I learned some material information yesterday afternoon, which means I must respectfully ask to continue the CSE meeting until next month. We're not doing this for purposes of evasion or delay. We have great respect for the CSE and its fact-finding function. I know the CSE is not taking up the motion to suppress, but the board's concerns there were that it didn't have enough evidence about the identity of the complainant and the theft of the emails. Yesterday, Dr. Mather and I both spoke to Dr. Romero from the Gilbert Police Department. Now, he's very cautious to provide any information as it's an ongoing investigation. He even said he's very uncomfortable with me discussing his investigation with the board, but he stated that this investigation will be concluded before the next CSE, and at that point we'll have the answer to our questions, which will help identify the complainant and the fact that the evidence was stolen. Now, we believe that new material information, which was not available when we filed the motion to suppress, would allow us to submit a motion for reconsideration on that motion to suppress. So therefore, we're asking for a continuance so we can obtain this information from law enforcement, which we believe will show that the complaint was, the evidence submitted with the complaint was illegally and feloniously stolen by Dr. Mather's ex-wife, who's also a psychologist subject to jurisdiction of this board, and she had improper, illegal, unethical motives for this complaint. Now going to Dr. Mather not being here, he's not present here on the advice of counsel. This was our idea. He's not looking to evade any questions. He wants the opportunity to discuss and explain his actions here. However, in addition to the evidentiary issues, he's also a designated victim in this criminal matter. He has rights under the Arizona Victims' Rights Act. He has rights under the Arizona Constitution that we need to be mindful of protecting. Now, finally, as we retain our position that the evidence should be suppressed because it was obtained in violation of federal and state law, we're concerned about developing too rich of a factual record. So therefore, even if the committee decides to deny my motion to continue and review the evidence and the merits of the matter, we would not want to put Dr. Mather in a position where he's answering factual questions right now. So it's for that purpose that he's not here, not from anything on his end. I myself would be happy to answer any questions you might have about the legal aspects, although I understand fully that you know, the motions to suppress, the evidentiary issue isn't before the committee. I just wanted to raise this issue and ask for the continuance today. Thank you.
Any words from any of the CSE board members or questions for Dr. Medina?
Oh, I was going to request to go into executive sessions to receive legal advice.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. We'll be moving into executive session. We're back. Thanks for being patient with us. I think now is time for the committee to begin deliberation. Please note that deliberation is the time for committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, attorneys, representing licensees, or any individuals. Dr. Medina, would you please begin that deliberation since you're the lead?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I would really like for Dr. Mather to be present at the meeting to be able to answer some questions. So based on that, I would like to file a motion, and I move to continue this matter at our next CSC meeting and for the staff to issue a subpoena for Dr. Mather to appear at our next CSC meeting to be able to answer questions.
So just to be clear, your motion is to continue the matter for staff to issue a subpoena for Dr. Mather's appearance.
Yes.
And implied in that is a denial of Mr. Brevington's request to continue it for the outcome of the criminal investigation. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. The licensee will be notified in writing by the board staff regarding the committee's decision today. Thank you all to attending this, and I want to move to the next complaint. The next complaint scheduled for review is case number 24-01 against Jennifer McCutcheon. Hopefully I said that correctly. If not, I'll give you a chance to correct me on that. I'm the lead on this case, so I'm going to give a brief overview on it. Let me just pull up my notes here. There it is. Dr. McCutcheon was issued her psychologist license by the board in 2001. She currently maintains a private practice here in Phoenix. Complainant JL, Complainant JL applied for juvenile probation officer position through the Cochise County Superior Court. They required JL to undergo a pre-employment evaluation. This evaluation was conducted by Dr. McCutcheon, which she met with JL virtually by Zoom on June 7th, 2023. JL subsequently notified her prospective employer on June 22nd that she has decided to withdraw from the consideration for the position, and she declined the offer to be evaluated by another psychologist. In her report, Dr. McCutcheon said that based on psychological testing administered, the interview with JL, that she was poorly suited for the position. On July 5th, the board reviewed JL's complaint against Dr. McCutcheon, alleging that she was unprofessional during the interview and demeaning to JL. It's the basis of the complaint. Is the complainant JL present? Not hearing anything. If you are present, please unmute yourself and state your initials for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement if you are here. And we may have questions for you following your statement. So is JL present? Hearing none. Dr. McCutcheon, are you and your attorney present? If so, you both may unmute yourselves, state your full name for the record, and this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and we may have questions following your statement.
Good morning. This is Farron Akins. I'm counsel for Dr. McCutcheon, and I'll let her introduce herself. We're going to stand on the record and be prepared to answer questions, but we don't have any additional information to provide to the committee at this particular time. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to kick off questions for Dr. McCutcheon's attorney or Dr. McCutcheon. Does anybody on the committee have any? Or Dr. McCutcheon, did you have anything to add? Sorry.
No, that's okay. You got the name correct.
Okay, good. I was hoping I got it correct.
Good morning. Hello. I'm Dr. Jenny McCutcheon. I appreciate your time and letting me be here and having a chance to answer any questions you might have.
I'll kick off a couple questions here as I'm the lead on this one. Looking through all the notes, I appreciate you being very responsive on, responsive on the response. First question, do you ever record these interviews? I noticed that you said you've done an impressive amount of 35,000 or so, but have you ever recorded one in the past?
No, I never have.
Okay. Why, as a follow-up question, why do you think the JL, the complainant, thought that the interview was being recorded as a part of her her complaint?
That's a good question. The written testing is provided by a proctoring agency that I employ as a vendor. They do record the written testing. The complainant consented to that being recorded. I think maybe she was confused or perhaps did not read the explanation, but there was nothing in my materials that indicated that the oral interview would be recorded.
Yeah, thank you for making that point clear. Are there any other questions from committee members? Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. McCutcheon, thank you for being here this morning. What I read in your response, well, first of all, let me back up. JL complained, a part of the complaint was that you came across as brash, didn't allow her time to speak or ask questions. And I noted that in your response, a standard in your protocol of this type of evaluation is that you permit inquiries and questions at the end of the session. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, you're reading that correctly.
Do you remember specifically in this case if you permitted or inquired if the complainant had any questions?
Well, I don't recall her response, but it's standard in every single evaluation I do that I conclude in two ways. And the first way is I ask an applicant, can you attest that you've been truthful in what we've discussed? And they always say yes. And then I say, is there anything else you'd like to add or clarify? And I don't recall that she said anything. I don't have any notes that I would have typed right into my report as we went where she added anything.
Okay. A follow-up question, if I may, Mr. Chair. Dr. McCutcheon, had you known this applicant previously?
No, she was never known to me.
Where, in terms of the applicant's description of your demeanor, would that type of brashness and direct questioning and almost an intimidation technique, is have you ever done anything like that in such an interview?
It's a good question. I'm not brash. I am directive. It's a highly structured interview. And so I do strive to be fair and objective and impartial. I strive to treat people with respect. I do get to direct the interview, though. I'm serving as a risk assessor to protect the public and work for an agency as a risk assessor in this evaluation. So it's not therapy. And I do find that applicants sometimes, when they have quite a bit of a mental health treatment history, really regard it as therapy and think it will be an open-ended chat, only to find that it's a highly structured interview. This is outlined in the informed consent. And this is the first thing that I cover with applicants at the beginning of the oral interview. I've been doing this a really long time, and sometimes people don't like that format. They don't like that it's highly structured.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for Dr. McCutcheon or her attorney? Hearing none, thank you all very much. Now we're going to begin deliberation. Please note that deliberation is time for the committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, attorneys, representing licensees, or any other individuals. I'm going to start the deliberation since I'm the lead. So unless either of the other members wishes to start the discussion, I'll at least kick it off. Having read through this case extensively in both the complaint, the original complaint, and also the response, and in addition to there not being a kind of a recorded interview, I'm not seeing a whole lot of, credible evidence that Dr. McCutcheon acted in unprofessional conduct, according to ARS 32-2061. Any thoughts on that, my fellow committee members, on kind of where my conclusion is formulating here? Dr. Medina?
I agree with you, Mr. Wynn. I'm sorry. Am I muted?
No, you're good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh. It's a little, but you're good.
Okay. So I'm so sorry. I was saying that, no, I agree with your assessment. I reviewed the record. It was a very complete record, and there was no evidence to me that there was something done that was unprofessional. I did have the same questions in regards of the recording, because it seemed like it was all recorded, but now when Dr. McCutcheon clarified that it was only the written portion that was recorded, I understand that. So I agree with your assessment.
Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Having done these types of evaluations, and certainly in a forensic setting, it's not therapy. And I think that many times individuals, clients become disenchanted and somewhat reactionary to the questioning, but it's for a purpose. And so I'm not, having looked through the record, looking at the complaint and looking at Dr. McCutcheon's response, I'm not seeing anything that rises to the level of unprofessional conduct. I just don't see it.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Any additional comments, deliberations amongst the committee members? Hearing none, do we have a motion? Anyone want to entertain a motion? Go ahead, Dr. Stewart.
I move that the case be dismissed.
Second.
Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries to dismiss case number 2401 against Dr. McCutcheon. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, committee members.
Thank you.
The licensee and complainant will both be notified in writing by the board staff in the near future regarding the committee's decision today. Once again, thank you for taking the time today. Moving on to the next one. Next complaint schedule review are number 23-56 and 23-57 against psychologist Valerie Kemper and Andrew Fitzgerald. One complaint was filed against these two licensees regarding a neuropsychological evaluation that they conducted for the complainant's son. Dr. Stewart, since you're the lead, would you please provide a brief overview of the allegations for both licensees?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. The complainant is, first of all, this is a high profile child custody case. And the neuropsychological assessment of the child has been brought up. Apparently, the parents have been in disagreement for quite some time, and one would agree and the other one would not, and they would take each other back to court. The mother is the one that provided the authorization to move forward with this evaluation. The father indicated that was an incorrect move, and the father seeks to have it established that he did not agree, that he had a legal right to stop the evaluation, and he did not permit it, and that no one contacted him, and that he seeks to have this known. And so Dr. Valerie Kemper is the psychologist with Kemper and Associates. Dr. Andrew Fitzgerald is a psychologist at Kemper. And together and individually, they saw the minor child. In reading through the dates and times of the various orders from the court permitting a single parent to have the default decision right to either confirm or deny services. Unless someone can point to something different than I'm looking at, it looks like the mother had actual authority to give permission for this evaluation process. Now there are various stages that a temporary authorization was provided initially, and the court awarded the mother that authority to seek medical services on her opinion and her thoughts alone. And then there's a later decision at the very end after the evaluation that confirms that mother had legal right to render into provision of services for the minor child. So at issue is when the authorization was provided to the mother by the court and when the evaluation took place. Now, I did read the last entry that was uploaded, I guess, 2 days ago now, and a new policy by Kemper and Associates on involving divorced and separated parents and the policies of the associate of the associates. And that seems to be an attempt to prevent this type of thing from happening in the future, this misinformation like that. I'll be happy to answer any specific questions. This was a complex case, and there's a lot of information that I did not bring up.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart, for that summary. Is the complainant CJ present? I believe I see CJ on the phone. If so, please unmute yourself. State your initials only for the record, and this is your opportunity to make a brief statement for both complaints, up to 5 minutes. And then the committee may have questions for you following your statement. CJ? If you're there, we can't hear you currently, but it looks like you're off mute.
Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. Thank you. CJ is on the line and I am present. The gentleman just spoke, he was very off the mark with the documentation supporting mother's rights. This case was decided in 2013. We went back to court in 2019. Prior to Kemper and Associates interviewing the children, providing for the children, there were no orders giving mother any say-so, any final permission on education or medical. Up until that point, we both had joint custody. We both had equal decision-making unless the children were in duress and it was a medical emergency. There was no medical emergency. Mother was later given final say-so for the child care in 2022. This was well after the Kemper and Associates reports. All the documentation that states everything that I'm stating to you right now, you guys had that. The gentleman just spoke, you lied. He absolutely just lied, and the documentation can prove that. Everything proves that. This case is actually moving to state attorney general because with the Kemper report, that was the basis of the final say-so decision, everybody on that panel that was a witness lied. And I have the sworn testimonies, and I have the video, and we have the text from that, which we will be turning over to the state. So Kemper and Associates report itself was a lie. Everyone who testified to the report lied on the stand. So you guys can say whatever you want. You have the documentation that supports that mother had no right to have the children seen without my consent. When I talked to Kemper and Associates, when I talked to Valerie Kemper herself, she did not even call me from her facility. She walked outside of her facility. She called me from a cell phone, which she blocked the number. And then she told me, Mr. Johns, in the state of Arizona, I do not need your permission to reach your children. That's a far cry from mother had final say-so. Mother never had final say-so at the time of that report. So Kemper just lied again, and the gentleman who just spoke, because you guys are an entity protecting each other, he's deciding to try to protect her. Go back and read the documents and put those dates together because you are far from being correct on what you just read to the public.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Galvin.
I think you were probably going to step in, but CJ needs to be respectful of the board members and not accuse them of lying.
Be respectful of me,
Mr.
as
Johnson,
well.
Because lying is not Mr. respect. Johnson, I don't know if you were here in the beginning.
Johns. My last name is Johns. J-O-H-N-S.
I apologize if I referred to your last name or something of your last name. I meant to see CJ, but you have to be respectful. You're not going to accuse board members of lying. If a board member was mistaken about dates of orders, he will clarify that, or other board members will clarify that. But if you continue to be disrespectful and accuse board members of lying, you will be removed from the meeting.
Okay, we can proceed.
Okay, CJ, is that... finish your brief statement.
Yeah, I finish this for now.
Okay. Do any of the committee members have any questions for CJ? Okay, hearing none. Let's hear from Dr. Kemper. Dr. Kemper, are you present? If so, you may unmute yourself and state your full name for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you following your statement. Also, if your attorney is present, you can handle it that way too.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. Mandy Carvis, counsel for Drs. Kemper and Fitzgerald, who are both also present. I will just make a brief statement with respect to both of them, and they would be happy to address any questions that any member of the committee has. We've only recently taken over this matter, and upon reviewing the file, I realize that there may have been some lack of clarity as to whether or not Drs. Kemper and Fitzgerald reviewed the orders prior to the appointment, so that's why we submitted the supplemental response. The date of the actual appointment of September 14th of 2021, Mom did provide a physical copy of a temporary order granting her sole decision-making for a period of time, which expired on September 3rd of 2021. They then asked for another order to confirm that she still had decision-making for both parents, at which time she provided a digital copy of a minute entry order from September 3rd of 2021, identifying her as the final decision maker authority on medical if the parties cannot agree. So it was in fact provided in writing that Mom did in fact have the ability to consent herself, and that in the event that the father would not agree, that Mom had final decision making ability. If that had not been provided, the appointment would not have gone forward. In order to ensure that things like this don't happen in the future, Kemper and Associates developed a new policy, which we provided to the board yesterday, divorced and separated parents policy, that specifically outlines the requirements. And now that documentation, either in the form of written consent by both parents or legal documentation, must be provided prior to even scheduling the evaluation so that we don't get to that potential point of having a visit and someone not bringing the paperwork or not having the proper paperwork and having to have the evaluation canceled, because that can obviously be frustrating for everyone, including the providers, and could prevent other folks from getting in for scheduling. So we believe that Drs. Kemper and Fitzgerald did in fact have proper consent for the evaluation. They've taken extra steps to make sure that this type of situation can't even happen in the future, that consent is provided well in advance of even scheduling the appointment. Therefore, we believe that this matter should be dismissed and not forwarded to the full board. But again, if anyone has any questions for either of the providers, they're here and happy to address your questions. And we appreciate the opportunity to be heard this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I guess, is there any additional comments from Dr. Kemper or Dr. Fitzgerald to add to that?
No, I think that Mandy covered all of the important points. And also thank you, Dr. Stewart, for giving the brief summary of the important points. And I do think that you had those important points accurately outlined. Thank you.
Dr. Fitzgerald?
Hi, I don't have anything to add right now, but I'm more than happy to answer questions. I did the initial phone intake interview with the mother in May of 2021. So happy to answer any questions.
To kick this off, does anybody on the committee have questions for Dr. Fitzgerald, Dr. Kemper, or their attorney? Dr. Stewart, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. I think I'd like to move for an executive session to get legal advice from the Associate Attorney General, Ms. Galvin.
Second.
Any discussion on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries to go to executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice. Looks like we're all back. We're still on.
We just confirm if Mandy is there.
Oh. Wait.
I sure am.
There we go. Okay.
We're still on questions for Dr. Kemper, Dr. Fitzgerald, or their attorney. So committee members, do you have any questions for them? Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Kemper, you personally saw the court authorization for the mother. The earlier appointment where she had legal right to affirm and seek medical services. Is that correct? You're on mute.
You're muted.
So sorry. Yes, that is correct. When she brought her son to the testing appointment, she hand carried the emergency order that was issued by the court. And we saw that and saw that it had expired on September 3rd and pointed that out to her and asked her if there was a current court order. And she did not have that one printed out, and she showed that to us digitally. So we did review that and could visually see that the judge had made the order giving her final say. And the temporary order that was issued stated that the father was refusing to authorize additional treatment. That's why she was initially given the temporary order. And then the next order was that she had final decision making.
And you personally saw that digital copy of the entry from the court?
I did, yes.
And so you undertook your office undertook this assessment under the knowledge that the mother had the authorization and from the court to approve of that evaluation?
That is correct. The intake was done way back in May. That was done with Dr. Fitzgerald and the mother, and she did reveal to Dr. Fitzgerald at that time that there could be consent issues. Dr. Fitzgerald reviewed with her that we would need consent from both parents, or if we could not get consent from both parents, we would need a court order saying that we did not need consent from both parents. So she proceeded over the next couple of months to get that court order and returned back to our office and requested to proceed with the evaluation. So the evaluation was put on hold for a good many months because we did not have the specific court order granting her permission to authorize that.
Thank you, Dr. Kipper.
Yes.
Any more, Dr. Stewart?
No, Chair, thank you very much.
Dr. Medina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question for Dr. Kemper, and that is, do you keep a copy of the orders or whatever is shown to you in regards to consent from parents that are not together?
Yes. Yes. Ideally, every court order will be in a file. She did hand carry the temporary order, and we initially said, no, that's not going to suffice. There needs to be something else that covers these dates of service. And then she provided that digitally. So we did see it. We did request her to either email that to us, print it out, send it in to us. And she did not, obviously. It wasn't until the father had called the office and I received the message from him. And I pulled the file to review the file and respond back to him and notice, oh, we never did get that from her, although we did visually see that order. And then when I called her, I asked her to supply that to us. And when I was on the phone with her, I asked her to review that information that she did put in the email, which is information that we had reviewed on the day of the evaluation as well.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Any other questions from the committee members for Dr. Kemper, Dr. Fitzgerald, or their attorney? Hearing none. Committee will now begin deliberation, which is the time for the committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, attorneys representing licensees, or any other individuals. Dr. Stewart, since you're the lead on this, could you begin the deliberation for the complaint?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly, it's a complicated case. Anytime you have a child custody case and the aspects of psychological assessment, it appears to me from my review of the records that Dr. Kemper did indeed have a valid authorization in terms of a court order authorizing the mother to undertake and provide services for her child. So I'm pretty comfortable with that from my read of the materials. Thank you.
Dr. Medina, any other comments, deliberations on this issue?
I agree with Dr. Stewart's assessment. I think the proper authorizations were obtained either physically or visually. The only thing in question that I had was whether they had a physical copy. It looks like the procedures are in place now to make sure that happens moving forward. So,
yeah, I guess I'll just kind of weigh in on that as well. I was kind of confused on the timeline when we first went into all this, just based on like, hey, when did this happen? When did that happen? When did they see the child? When was this? And then the temporary orders confused things for me a whole lot because it lasted just such a short time. I think it was an important point that Dr. Kemper said, yes, ideally they do. Which is just a little slightly concerning that they didn't have the actual written copy as part of the file, you know, before this went forward. But overall, I agree with both of y'all's assessment that the it seems like it was done according to at least, you know, a court order, at least visually, if anything. So is there any other deliberations on this? If not, I would go ahead, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wynn. For Dr. Kemper and Dr. Fitzgerald, it seems like a lot of this could have been avoided had these policies been in effect to begin with. And the way it evolved was certainly unfortunate. And it seems like from the divorce separated parents policy that you've provided to the board, it seems like you've covered that for future use. I think that I need to remind myself that in these hotly contested divorce issues, claim and counterpoint, claim and point and counterpoint is a daily grind, I'm afraid. And I think everyone else gets sucked into that. But I think that moving forward, it seems like that Kemper and Associates does have a good policy in place. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, I'd like to make a motion, if I may.
Sure, I'll entertain a motion.
I move the case be dismissed.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on the motion?
Can we clarify that is a dismissal for both case 2356 and 2357?
Yes, yes, Ms. Galvin. I move that we dismiss the complaint number 2356 and also dismiss the complaint number 2357.
Second.
All right. Any discussion on that motion, including both of those complaints? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion carries. Both committee, let's see, we've already discussed both of them together. So the staff will follow up in the following days with Dr. Fitzgerald and Dr. Kemper on the decision made today. Now we're on to the last agenda item. Last agenda item, which is adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed, nay. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for your time once again today.